The 2021 class into the Hall of Fame were officially inducted last night. We're going to have news involving the Edmonton Oilers and some things that people said that I think got taken out of context or were misinterpreted. News, of course, on the Ottawa Senators. I want to talk about the Ducks and Kings really quickly, too. And, of course, the Toronto Maple Leafs. All that and more is coming up on episode 109 of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Let's go. Beautiful day today, November the 16th. It is a Tuesday. Welcome to the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Your host, Kyle Grimard. As always, if you want to follow me along and listen on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, I'm starting to realize a lot more people listen on Spotify than I think. I always just assumed it was Apple Podcasts and then a couple Google Podcasts, but just going through the data and whatnot, a lot of people on Spotify. I still the majority on Apple Podcasts, but nevertheless, I always appreciate it. Follow me along on Instagram and Twitter at ST Hockey Podcast. I know that I haven't been nearly as on top of things as I normally have been. It's been a wild last, I would say, 5-6 days or so. Just a lot going on with me work-wise, personally and stuff. And so I just appreciate the patience. I know I haven't been as on that as I normally am. It's a very busy time of year. A lot of other things that unfortunately have played factors into it. So hopefully you'll stick with me and I will be getting back on that at some point. Also, too, just hopefully timing we'll open up a little bit to get some special guests on here, whether they are immersed or not in the hockey world, even just someone else to talk about, a big fan, some other perspective. I'll try and get on that more too. Just like I said, it's been wild for a little bit. I was actually debating on not having an episode this week just with everything that's been going on, but I figured carving out time and already down to one day a week. It's been, there's already so much that happens within that time frame. So, nevertheless, I talked about it last week on the show, the difference in a week and how it affects certain takes and whatnot. So we'll get to some other things today. Of course, we'll discuss the 2021 class for the Hockey Hall of Fame. We're also going to bring up the Vancouver Canucks, and they have really struggled, and there's a main reason behind it, which we'll get into. Obviously, the COVID situation with the Ottawa Senators, the Anaheim Ducks, and Kings are kind of rolling, like low key, and some players are really going off. For Ryan Getzlaf has been great, and we'll talk the Oilers' dominance. And someone said something about them already in playoff hockey, and I want to try to interpret and see where he's coming from. I don't agree with it, but I want to try and give my take on what I think he's trying to say. But anyways, we'll get all to that in just a little bit. I want to try and get to more topics in the time that we have. So let's start here with the class of the 2020 Hall of Fame. They were all inducted on Monday night, and 6 new members received the highest honor in the sport. The induction ceremony was previously postponed due to the pandemic. So there won't be a 2021 class. They are officially the 2020 class. There will not be a 2021 class. And then there would just be, more individuals who are up for the award for 2022 and the induction ceremony. But nevertheless, the inductees for last night's ceremonies include Marian Hossa, Jerome Iginla, Kevin Lowe, Kim St. Pierre, Doug Wilson, and Ken Holland. And I want to start here with some of the individuals. So Doug Wilson, who almost 800 points across over 1,000 games. He was a Norris Trophy winner. He led all Blackhawks in scoring for, listen to this for a second, 10 consecutive seasons as a defenseman, and holds the fourth highest single season goal total by a blue liner in NHL history. He scored 39 9 goals in a season, which is pretty remarkable. Kim St. Pierre, who was a goaltender, was the first female netminder ever inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. She is a 3-time Olympic gold medalist in 2002, 2006, and 2010. She is a 5-time world championship gold medalist, 1999, 2000, 01, 04, and 07, and a 2-time Clarkson Cup winner in 09 and 2011. She emphasized how honored she was to be joining the other 7 women who are already in enshrined, and I love the fact that that is the point that she had made. Not that she was inducted among other men, but she is joining the previous 7 other women who are part of the Hockey Hall of Fame. Big congratulations there. Kevin Lowe, who also was a defenseman, didn't have the same goal totals or point totals as Doug Wilson. 84 goals, 374 assists, and 1,254 career games, but a 6-time Stanley Cup winner and the only player in Edmonton Oilers history to play 1,000 regular season contests with the team. Yes, you heard that correctly. Not Wayne Gretzky, Mark Messi. Nope. Kevin Lowe, the only player in Oilers history. Pretty remarkable stuff. The Builder Award going to Ken Holland, who is a 4-time Stanley Cup winner as an executive, 3-time as a general manager in 98, 2002, and 2008, and is one of only 5 GMs in NHL history to guide his teams to more than 1,000 regular season wins. The teams that he was a part of, of course, the Detroit Red Wings and the Edmonton Oilers. The big ones were basically with the Detroit Red Wings winning cups in 98, 02, and 08. And then, of course, we'll get to some of the other players here. Marian Hossa, over 1,100 points in his illustrious career, 1,300-plus games, 3-time Stanley Cup winner in 2010, 2013, and 2015. He was the first player in NHL history to play in 3 straight Stanley Cup finals. If you remember this, I believe at first he was on the Pittsburgh Penguins. They played Detroit in the finals, lost. Then went to Detroit, played the Penguins, lost. And then he finally went to Chicago the next year, and then he finally got that cup he's been so alluding to, and then went on to win 2 more the following season and in 2013 and 2015. He really understood. You hear about it all the time with certain players and guys who, for some reason, can't win a Stanley Cup. The other one of those guys is part of this conversation, Jerome McGinley. We'll talk about him in a bit, but the Joe Thorntons, the Patrick Marlowes, guys who are just trying to find any way to get that cup. This is basically just the success story of when you do that. You know, Hossa was going around. He played for the Ottawa Senators, Atlanta Thrashers, Penguins, Red Wings, and the Blackhawks. Consistent 30-plus, 40-goal score, 60-70, 80-point guy all the time. I mean, clearly, he had over 1,100 points in his career. But, you know, this was a story. A lot of people, you know, I've seen people saying 5 people or players who should have made it over blank, right? And winning a cup is hard. Winning 3 is next level. Like, that's getting lost on some people when you hear about other guys being inducted in and you see... Kevin Lowe, who was a 6-time cup winner, majority of them coming in the 80s. And you hear about the Taves and Canes and Crosbys and Malkins, who have each won 3 cups. They all started where they were. Hossa had to find his home. And it is hard picking right sometimes. How many times have we seen a guy go to a team, think it's going to be a fit, think they'll go on a run, and then not end up winning? Look at Patrick Maroon. Guy goes from St. Louis to Tampa, and then signs an extension in Tampa. 3 straight Stanley Cup victories for the dude. Like, that is, it is hard to do. So I got to commend Marian Hossa for going from Pittsburgh to Detroit, losing in back-to-back Stanley Cup finals, and then eventually picking Chicago, where he ends up winning 3 in a 6-year span. So remarkable stuff, amazing career. I remember I was in Detroit. I was a kid. I was about 15 years old. We were in Detroit playing a tournament, and we had an opportunity at the Joe Louis Arena. One, we played there, and then we watched Detroit. They were playing, I forget who it was at the time, but they weren't very good. I don't think it was, it might have been Atlanta, to be honest with you. And Marian Hossa scored this goal. It's still on the highlight reel. If you type in Marian Hossa highlight reel goal, I believe it's against the Atlanta Thrashers, and it is absolutely, he dangles, I don't know how many guys, and the play is just like us kids sitting there at 15, 16 are in awe. And I remember looking over, I'm like, we actually, because you know, when you watch SportsCenter and you watch all the highlight reels and you like, you see it on TV, it's one thing to watch it on TV. It's a whole other animal when you watch it in person. And Marian Hossa has scored one of those goals that it's going to be engraved in my memory forever. So congratulations to him. And then, of course, Jerome Iginla, right winger, captain for the Calgary Flames, Olympic gold medalist in 2002 and 2010. He is an Art Ross winner, a two-time Rocket Richard winner, only one of 20 players in NHL history to reach 600 goals. He had 625 in his career and 675 assists, playing over 1,500 games, 1,300 points on the dot. He was a member of the Calgary Flames for the majority of the time, and then a guy trying to trace a cup went to the Penguins, the Boston Bruins, the Colorado Avalanche, and the Los Angeles Kings. And the one thing that he talked about was being able to break the barrier for players of color, for breaking racial barriers in hockey. He said, being a young black hockey player, it was important for me to see the other black players in the NHL. I know it's thanks to guys like Grant Fuhr and Willie O'Ree who made me know that my dream of playing in the NHL was attainable. You see guys now in Wayne Simmonds, Quentin Byfield is one of the highest drafted players of color in NHL history. It's pretty remarkable stuff. And, you know, in other nationalities of players, I know he's, you know, he has a white pigment on his skin, but Austin Matthews is of Mexican descent. He's from Arizona of all places, and he's a first overall pick. So, yeah, barriers are absolutely broken. And guys like Anson Carter and Wayne Simmonds and the list goes on and on and on of guys who have broken through, and hopefully it just continues to extend further and further and further. And yeah, Jerome Iginla, I mean, what can you say? Almost that cup run in 04 where they almost won the cup, game six in Calgary. He was such a big part. Everyone talks about that 2002 Olympic team with Joe Sakic and Mario Lemieux, and the list goes on and on. Steve Yzerman, Brendan Shanahan, but Jerome Iginla in the gold medal game against the United States, he had two goals. He might have had three or four points in that game. And everyone talked about the best player being, you know, Sakic or Lemieux in that game. Jerome Iginla was low-key one of the best players on that team and in that game specifically. And he was a catalyst for breaking that, was it 50-year drought or something like that? It was unbelievable. And then, of course, the, the Olympic medal in 2010, Vancouver.
Up with it again. He's on the ice with Iginla. Iginla scores it. Sidney Crosby, the golden goal. And Canada has once in a lifetime Olympic gold.
The Iggy chance from Sidney Crosby, and he one-hands it to him to get him the puck, and, you know, just flings it back, and Crosby was able to win. And, you know, that was a line. Jerome Iginla and Sidney Crosby playing together. So really, really fantastic. He's one of my favorite players. He's why, like, I am a fan of the Toronto Maple Leafs, but I am also a fan of the Calgary Flames for two reasons. One, as a goaltender, watching Mika Kiprusoff was highlight level stuff. And number two was Jerome Iginla. He was the prototypical quintessential captain that you wanted on your team. He scored, he assisted, he played defense, he fought, he hit. You know, that was the all around captain. Remember a time, it was a while ago, but in St. Louis, David Backes, right? 25, 30 goal seasons, could hit, could fight, playoff catalyst. You know, that Jerome Iginla was a better version of that dominant David Backes. You know, when you think now of captains that do it all, you know, Alexander Ovechkin, for all the hate he has of, you know, all he does is score goals and shoot the puck. Well, yeah, but he hits, he skates hard, he's physical, he back checks now. Oh yeah, and he has over 600 career assists. We talked about Jerome Iginla being a complete player. He has 675 career assists. Ovechkin has 602. So it's pretty amazing stuff. And that was the bar that Jerome Iginla set. So congratulations to all of the inductees into the Hockey Hall of Fame. We waited a long time, but thankfully we have gotten here now, the 2020 inductees, and a big congratulations going on out to all of them. All right, so I've mentioned it here on a few times on the show that I cover the Vancouver Canucks with the Hockey Writers, right? I write articles on them each and every week, and I break down, and I try and keep it as positive as I possibly can. Not that I don't want to write hateful things or mean things or negative things or critical things, but I think a lot of the news right now around them has been the negativity. even going back to the trade that sent, that brought in Connor Garland and Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and those players have actually been very good. But Vancouver right now is struggling. They are 5-9-2 on the season. They got obliterated by the Anaheim Ducks, and the game prior, they got obliterated by the Colorado Avalanche and by the Vegas Golden Knights. And, you know, it's and in the offseason, you thought they did all the right things. They brought in Yaroslav Halak, who was a better backup goaltender than Braden Holtby. Thatcher Demko looked like he was coming into his own, and they signed him long-term to a very reasonable deal. They brought in Connor Garland, who is right now one of the leading scorers on the team, and Oliver Ekman-Larsson seems to have a place on the blue line. They signed Elias Pettersson. They got Quinn Hughes locked down. Both of them, the fairly decent contracts. JT Miller is still, I wrote an article on him. He's just, everyone, there's so many big names on Vancouver. Quinn Hughes, Pettersson, Besser, Demko in net, and Tyler Myers, and we all forget about JT Miller. JT Miller leads the team in goals and points. Remember that trade a couple years ago that got highly criticized? I think even by me, because at that point for Tampa, it was a cap dump, right? Because he makes $5.25 million or $5.2 million. And at that point, I remember teams trading away players with those caps and also having to give up draft capital. Well, not only did Tampa get rid of some cap, they got a first round pick in return from Vancouver. Well, it's tough to criticize now because he's been either number one or number two in team scoring every year he's been in Vancouver, including in his first season, 72 points, which his previous career high, I believe, was 50-something, I think 52 points. And he added 20 onto it in his first year in Vancouver. He got instant symmetry with Elias Pettersson, which, by the way, that was his career high in points, too, when Elias Pettersson played with JT Miller. But there's a lot of negativity going on with this team. And I keep trying to figure out what's going on with them. Why aren't they playing well? They've got all the players. Secondary scoring. They've got a third-line center in Jason Dickinson, which they traded for from the Dallas Stars. Connor Garland really slots in well. You've got rookies. You got the rookie, Polzolkin. You've also got Nils Höglander, who's coming off a pretty solid rookie year, too. Like I said, JT Miller, Brock Besser, Pettersson, Bo Horvat's your captain. Your top four, so, you know, looks solid. Travis Hamonic's back. Tyler Myers is there. You got rid of Nate Schmidt, who wasn't a very good fit. You brought in Ekman-Larsson to be, you know, a top four player. He's kind of bounced back a little bit, and Quinn Hughes is Quinn Hughes. So what's going on with this team? First of all, they have the league's fifth worst goal differential, minus 14. They've been outscored 22-8 during a four-game losing streak and gave up back-to-back seven-goal games against Colorado and Vegas. But to me, it's the special teams. Their penalty kill is in the basement, 62.3% success rate. Some of the better teams, they click around 80, 85%. Their power play, with all the weapons I just said, 15%. They're already 6 points out of a playoff spot. You know the narrative for, I mean, this is the one that I just have the best example. But Kyle Dubas and the Toronto Maple Leafs, the general manager, was brought in 2018. It's been 3 years. They've made the playoffs every year. He's made some pretty solid moves and brought in some pretty great contracts. Everybody complaining right now about Jack Campbell, about Michael Bunting, about Andre Kasha. Those three players alone don't even make $4 million combined. Yes, Nick Ritchie's not a great contract. Guess what? It's $2 million. They can get rid of it if they want to. How's the Marner deal looking now? He's looking pretty good lately. Leads the team over the last 6-7 games in points. What about William Nylander? Remember that holdout? Remember everyone wanted Kyle Dubas' head? It's one of the best contracts in hockey now. No, he paid Austin Matthews too much money. Yeah, well, he was a Rocket Richard winner last year. Everyone's going to criticize the John Tavares thing. He's also been one of the best Leafs over the last 10 games or so. People were calling for his head. It's been 3 years since the dude was hired. Their winning percentage is through the roof. He made the right coaching change. The team has made the playoffs. They haven't just had the playoff success. He can't do anything else at that point. Jim Benning has been the general manager of the Vancouver Canucks since 2011. The dude has had 10 years with the team. Since that run in 2011, I think they've made the playoffs three times. The last time happened to come in the bubble when they magically got in because it was a play-in and they were hot. And they rode ridiculous goaltending of Jacob Markstrom. And then he got hurt. And then Thatcher Demko put up like heroic numbers. Here were his numbers. In his three, I think it was four games against Vegas, he had a .985 save percentage and a .85 goals against. Meaning he gave up less than a goal a game and stopped virtually every single shot he faced. That's how Vancouver made it that far. But this team is struggling, falling apart. The joke around Jim Benning is don't allow him near his phone on free agents day, on free agent frenzy, because he spends all his money, which is what I thought he was doing. He signed Tucker Pullman to this super long extension for okay money, which is fine. Like it's less than $3 million and he can play maybe a top six role. And like sometimes he can slot in the top four. But all he did was spend money. The Jay Beagle, Antoine Roussel deals, the ones that he traded away, he signed in the first place. They're awful deals. And in fairness, he traded them both and also brought on a bad deal. Now, the deal he signed with Connor Garland was great. It's a five-year deal under $5 million per season. Garland's going to score like 20, 25 goals this year. But you start there. That's the difference maker. Get a general manager in. This team has been turning over players left, right, and center. Even the coaches have changed recently. Travis Green's been only with the team for what, 3 years? 3 or 4 years now? General manager's been there for 10. 10. If you're looking to make a move, shake up the organization, that's the one you start with. And then if the player situation doesn't work out, then you make a move. But I'm thinking, who do you move? You just signed Pettersson. He won't go anywhere. JT Miller's your best player. He can't go anywhere. Your captain, Bo Horvat, has been solid as a number two center. You're not trading away center depth. Hoglander's young and barely makes any money. Podolsky, or whatever his name is on his rookie year. And Connor Garland, you just signed to a five-year extension. So my thought process is, is Brock Besser the odd man out? I'm not saying he is or that he needs to get dealt in any way, shape, or form. But like, you're not trading away a defenseman right now unless you've got someone ready to go. And the only guy I can think of is Tyler Myers. But then your top right-hand shot defensemen are Travis Hamonic, who was gone for the beginning of the season, and Tucker Pullman, who's been suspended for two games. I don't know. I'm thinking out loud here. Maybe you start at the top, and if things don't really go from there, you know, then you move on and you get a player. But Benning's been there 10 years. Rode the coattails of the Sedins for as long as he could, and they've made the playoffs once since. And it was during the bubble in a play-in where they got hot and beat a team in the St. Louis Blues who were ravaged by COVID, and half their players were barely playing at 50%. I don't know. Food for thought. I want to get to the Oilers in a second here. I want to quickly touch on the Ottawa Senators COVID situation. Sens are not going to be playing their next three games against the Devils, Predators, and Rangers as scheduled because of the COVID-19 outbreak from the team. The associate coach, Jack Capiano, says, and 10 Ottawa players are currently in NHL's COVID protocol. Nikita Zaitsev, who had gotten out of the protocol, was then shot right back into it. Ottawa's breakout has forced the club to cancel now four straight practices. The NHL added that the franchise closed was its training facilities, and the league is currently reviewing the team's regular season schedule to try and work some stuff out. We saw this happen last year with Vancouver. They missed almost a month of the season, and then they played like 36 games in 20 or 25 days or something absurd like that. Of the team missing, Austin Watson, Connor Brown, Dylan Gambrell, Alex Formanton, Nick Holden, Josh Brown, Nikita Zaitsev, Victor Mete, and goaltender Matt Murray, along with one of their coaches on the coaching staff. Drake Batherson is another one, too. Sens being in the COVID-19 protocol isn't necessarily indicative of a positive test. It just goes to show that, you know, there's a possibility of it being, you know, in the area or spread around, or they don't want to get to a point where it gets spread. But yeah, Ottawa right now looks like they're going to be sitting out for a bit. So they played a game against the Calgary Flames. Remember the Tkachuk brothers? One was wearing the C, one was wearing the A. But yeah, the next three games against the Preds, Rangers, and Devils will be rescheduled due to the COVID-19 outbreak. I don't know what is going to happen. I think the league is going to reevaluate the situation. Now, luckily, they're not like the Boston Bruins, who have only played like 12 games. They played 15 games, so they can slowly start to work these in. Basically, it just gives the Devils, Preds, and Rangers a little bit more rest. And the crappy part about it is that they're going to have to make it up at some point, unfortunately. And the schedule will be a little bit more condensed for them. But this is hopefully for the best. I don't know what the indications are right now in Ottawa in terms of COVID and the numbers and whatnot. In Ontario, they seem to be okay. There's an award show coming in a little bit. Concert seems to be opening back up. The London Knights are playing at full capacity now, so things are fine to that extent, but they sound like they're a little bit worse over now in Ottawa, so we'll keep an eye on that as things go along. All right, I want to move on here to the Edmonton Oilers, and they continue to prove me wrong and a lot of people wrong for their start to the season. I think they're 11-2 on the year. They just beat the St. Louis Blues. Kyler Yamamoto scoring a goal in the final minutes to ice that one. But, you know, surprise, surprise, they're being carried by their two superstars and arguably two of the best players on the planet. Leon Draisaitl, Connor McDavid. And first of all, I want to put it in perspective before things, before I talk about what else was said afterwards. So they lead the league in points. Draisaitl 31, McDavid's number two at 27. Number three is Ovechkin at 26. The next closest player is Troy Terry and Evgeny Kuznetsov at 20. Leon Draisaitl has 11 more points than the number four and five scorers in the NHL. He's got five more than Ovechkin, but Ovechkin's on another level right now at 37 years of age. Draisaitl also leads the league in goals with 15, Ovechkin with 12, Kreider and Connor and Terry with 11. Now, here is where, before I get into this, actually, John Tortorella came out and they were on a broadcast and they were talking about the Oilers. And he talked about how Connor McDavid and the team have to change their game plan if they want to be successful in the postseason.
He complained about it a little bit. He wasn't getting the calls. I you know, quite honestly, and I hope I say it correctly, just shut up.
Yeah.
Don't talk about it. I do think he has to change his game a bit, not turn into a checker, obviously.
Right.
He's talked about culture. He's talked about standard. He's talked about winning. You're not going to outscore. You're not just going to fill the net during playoffs and outscore teams. Mm-hmm. You have to play on the other side of the puck. You have to have that business-type attitude of nothing's going to bother me, no matter how you're going to check me. Don't talk about it. Just play hard, play through it.
Basically stating that they're going to get bullied, that you can't just fill the net, that playoff hockey is a little different. A lot of people gave him crap for it. I saw articles written about, like, this is why Torts isn't a coach anymore. And, like, listen, there was interest on him being a coach when the Chicago Blackhawks had a vacancy, when Florida had a vacancy. And I think what happened is a lot of people took what he said out of context. And I'm going to explain to you as to why I think that. Number one, playoff hockey is always tighter. So I can understand goals aren't necessarily as prevalent when they come. And that was an obvious one. But then again, when you're talking about the two players in the league who are 1-2 in scoring and are just absolutely lighting the pants off the league, it makes a lot of sense. But I'm not taking a side because I don't think, like, listen, if you have a, like, lean into your strengths. Do you guys know who Gary Vee is? Right? Vaynerchuk, he's the guy who he's like a venture capitalist. He's a businessman. He's like worth millions and millions and millions, soon billions of dollars. He wants to buy the Jets. he talks about if you're good at something, get better at it, right? He doesn't believe in, you know, if you're weak at something, stop focusing on what you're good at and try to get your other skills up. Like, if you're good at something, be great at it. That's what he says. He says, lean into what you're great at. Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are great at scoring goals. They're great at setting goals up. They are great at filling the net. They will outscore you on every single night. They are that good players. They are probably, if not 1-2, 1-3 in terms of rankings of players in the world. Like Draisaitl's been underrated for so long. He's got 4 more points than McDavid does at 31, and he leads the league in goals with 15. But here is where I think, what I think John Tortorella was trying to get at, and he didn't necessarily explain well enough. Of Draisaitl's 31 points this season, 11 of them have come on the power play. Of Connor McDavid's 27 points this season, 13 of them have come on the power play. Nearly 50% of Connor McDavid's production has come on the power play. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who has 18 points this season, 17 of them assists. I think he leads the league. Of his 18 points, 11 of them have come on the power play. That's 61% of your points have come when your team is at an advantage at 5-on-4. Draisaitl's at over 33%. McDavid's at almost 50%. Playoff hockey is not called the same as regular season hockey. It just isn't. You do not get 5-6 power play opportunities a game in the playoffs. I think that's what he was trying to allude to. Because again, by all means, if you can score in the playoffs, that is an absolute bonus. It's a lot harder to score in the playoffs. But we watch teams like Montreal completely zone in and key on the Toronto Maple Leafs' best players, the Winnipeg Jets' best players, the Vegas Golden Knights' best players. And they shut them down, and they had to find different ways to score goals. And you've got guys who are in your face, who are roughing you, tripping you, holding you, slashing you, mauling you, doing whatever the case may be, and they're not all going to get called. And already, Edmonton's already complaining about the fact that their guys are not getting the penalty calls. Like, there's been a couple plays over the last 3 games where Connor McDavid has been absolutely very much so tripped, and the calls aren't going their way. They normally do. But in the playoffs, they might not. And listen, I'm not advocating, like, I'm not sitting here being like, oh yeah, playoff hockey, this is the way it should be. I think the rule book should be called. But come on, you're sitting there right now thinking that more penalties are going to get called in the playoffs than in the regular season? No. It's more physical, it's more intense, it's tighter, it's a lot harder. And if your team is predicated on scoring with the man advantage, instead of getting 5-6 opportunities a game, you might get 2-3, if you're lucky 3. 61% of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins' points have come on with a man advantage. Nearly 50% of Connor McDavid's production, 13 points in of his 27, which is 48%. Of Leon Draisaitl's 31 points, 35% of them have come with the man advantage. You will not get those opportunities come postseason. I think that's what he's trying to allude to. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that Connor McDavid is not going to be a playoff performer and he's got to change his game. That's where I absolutely don't agree with it. And I know that's what he said. He said that Connor McDavid has to change the way he plays if he wants to be successful in the postseason. First of all, he's already been to the second round before. More successful than any Leaf player. Leon Draisaitl has been a monster in the postseason before. We've watched it. They've never been the problem for Edmonton in the postseason. They score regardless. But I think they score a little less. Everyone scores a little less. But those two in particular, because of the lack of power play opportunities you get in the playoffs. Now, am I ever going to bet against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and not get theirs? No. They're going to put up, I've talked about this earlier, they're going to put up like 150, 160 points each. Each guy. They are going to combine for more than 300 points alone this year, which is absolute insanity. And again, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins just jumping on the coattails with 17 assists this season from McDavid and Draisaitl goals. It's friggin' hilarious. Of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, 18 points, 17 of them are assists, and 11 of them have come on the power play. It's hysterical. When he signed his contract, he went, yeah, I understand that I'm going to get a lot of points and I'm not going to be a very big part of them. Nothing against Ryan Nugent-Hopkins as a player, but like 17 of your 18 points are assists. The point I'm trying to make is, no, I don't agree with the fact that John Tortorella thinks that these players have to, quote, change the way they play the game if they want to be successful in the playoffs. Edmonton's problem in the playoffs has never been McDavid and Draisaitl. The problem in the playoffs has been their defense and goaltending, which so far has improved. I still don't believe in it. I still think they need to get a proven guy, because I think there will be a blip this season where Mikko Koskinen or Mike Smith can't stop a beach ball. I think that the defense is going to start getting holes and gaps in it. I think Evan Bouchard has been a great addition so far this season in his rookie year. I think he has 11 points. But again, a lot of playoff a lot of power play production. Darnell Nurse has been logging a lot of minutes. He's not getting as many points and as many goals as he did because he's got a lot more defensive responsibilities, but I think he's been great. But I don't believe in the goaltending. I don't believe that Tyson Barrie has all of a sudden found his defensive ways. I think he's a very one-way offensive guy, which correlates very well with Edmonton. But I think what John Tortorella was trying to say was, you do not get the amount of power play opportunities you do in the playoffs as you do in the regular season. When Edmonton's getting 5 or 6 opportunities and they're banking on a couple every game, you might only get 2 or 3, and you might not score on them because they're a lot more aggressive penalty killing in the playoffs. It's a lot harder to score, especially as you go later. I would never bet against those two. But I think that's the point that he's trying to come across right now. I don't think McDavid needs to change his game necessarily, but I think that you cannot count on the power play getting 5 to 6 opportunities a game in order for you to win 5-4 against St. Louis, which you score another few power play goals. But I think your additions like Zach Hyman and Warren Fogle will benefit you greatly in the playoffs. I think the growth of Evan Bouchard and the increased play of Darnell Nurse is going to help. But I think McDavid and Draisaitl keep doing their thing. They hope to get a call here and there, and you hope that your team takes advantage of them. That's all. I don't agree that Tortorella thinks that they need to change their game, or specifically McDavid needs to change his game completely. But I think if the power play is not going, and of McDavid's 27 points, 13 of them have come because you are up a man. Draisaitl of his 31, 11 of them, 35% of your points have been because you've been up a man. Nugent Hopkins, 61% of that dude's production this year has been because that the team that they're playing is down a man. And of his 18 points, 17 of them, which is 94% of your production, has been assists. A lot of them secondary to McDavid and Draisaitl. Edmonton's proven everyone wrong so far, and they'll continue to do that. But I think the point that needs to be more... Edmonton's problem has never been scoring. It's been keeping the puck out of their net. They've been doing a better job of it this year. I think at some point there will be a bigger hole in net, specifically with Mikko Koskinen and that defense. But for the time being, they're flying high, they're scoring goals, and they're a nightmare to stop right now. I want to touch on a couple teams here before I get to the Leafs. Kudos to the Anaheim Ducks and the Los Angeles Kings right now, who, looking at the playoffs and the standings right now, are number 2 and right now 5th in the Pacific Division. The Anaheim Ducks have rattled off 7 straight wins. They're 7-1-2 in their last 10. They've gotten points in 9 of 10. Troy Terry has gone, I think, 13 straight games. Maybe it's 15 straight games with a point. I don't know. But Troy Terry has 11 goals and 9 assists in 15 games this year. Ryan Getzlaf has 17 points in 16 games. Mind you, 16 of them are assists. But Trevor Zegras has been scoring some goals lately, too. But as I count the games, 14 straight games of the point for Troy Terry. 14 straight. That is remarkable. Remember when he first came into the league? Right, remember him too as a he was a World Juniors hero for the team for Team USA because he scored like 3 straight short shootout goals. A couple years went by in the league and he wasn't really living up to the caliber of player. But now at 24, couple years under his belt, some experience, Troy Terry's become that dude. He's become that dangerous. John Gibson has looked good this year, has a 237 goals against, 924 save percentage. Adam Henrique has 13 points. Kevin Shattenkirk has 13 points. Cam Fowler is 12. Zegras is 8 and 14. Jamie Drysdale in his first year, 7 points in 16 games. And that's without production from Ricard Raquel, who's only got 4 goals in 8 games or 4 points in 8 games. Maxime Comtois, who was one of their leading scorers last year, only has a point this year. Max Jones doesn't have a point. He's only played in 2 games. It's a fun little team. Kudos to the Anaheim Ducks. They have really been, they've been surprising a lot of teams. And also, I want to give a shout out to the Los Angeles Kings. And by the way, shout out to Dion Phaneuf. Officially announces his retirement from the NHL. Dion Phaneuf calling it a career. Teams with the Flames, Leafs, Sens, and Kings spanning over 1,000 games, 14 seasons, playing 1,048. So congratulations going on out to him. But the Kings, 7-2-1 in their last 10, have won 7 of 8. We're on a 7-game win streak. They started the season 1-4-1. And have been now 7-2-1 over the last 9 or 10 games. Remarkable stuff. Absolutely remarkable stuff from them. The Philip Deneau deal has absolutely worked out. And remember people saying that he's not much of a scorer and that he won't contribute that much offensively. Has 9 points so far in 15 games. Alex Iafallo looks like a friggin' superstar. He's got 13 and 15. Kopitar is freed up more because Deneau takes the defensive responsibilities. He's got 16 points in 15 games, including 8 goals. Adrian Kempe's chipped in with 5 goals and 9 points. Dustin Brown with 7. Drew Doughty has only played 4 games, but he had 7 points before going down with injury. Victor Arvidsson with 5 points in 8 games. Andreas Anthonisiou with 5 and 5. Arthur Kaliev, their young stud, so far has 5 points through 14 games. This is without, by the way, Quinton Byfield, who was their second overall pick a couple years ago. Elias Anderson's only played in 3 games. Gabe Vilardi, who's a high-profile draft pick. And I said this at the beginning of the year, that I like the goaltending tandem of Quick and Peterson. Jonathan Quick has been drinking from the fountain of youth. 8 games played. He's 4-3-1. He's got a goose on the year, a shutout. Has a 198 goals against and a 935 save percentage. Peterson, 284 and 902. Quick is just bounce back and has been spectacular. Good on Quick, good on the Kings. I get a couple people who message me actually saying, hey, why don't you talk about the Kings more? I will if they go on runs like this. I will if their players continue to impress it the way that they've done. Big kudos to them. Shout out to them. They have been on a tear. You know, they sit only 5th right now behind the Flames and Golden Knights, but they are right there in the thick of it. Good on them. Fun seeing the Ducks and Kings kind of back playing competitive hockey after a lot of years, after a few years, about 5-6 years of them really not being a part of it. Remember the early 2010s? It was always the Kings and Blackhawks and the Kings and Ducks and the Ducks and Blues. Oh my gosh, it was a gauntlet then. And good to see them kind of back to relevancy, let's just say. All right, and let's end here with the Toronto Maple Leafs real quick because the majority of the listeners here are Toronto Maple Leafs. They've won 3 straight. They've won 8 of their last 9 games. their goaltending situation seems to be pretty spectacular. Jack Campbell has played 13 of their 16 games. He is 8-3-1 with a 1.82 goals against and a 9.39 save percentage. The bad part, every other goalie that's played a game this year doesn't have a goals against average better than 4, and neither of them have a save percentage. Actually, all three of them, none of them have a save percentage better than 8.80. Peter Mrazek's only played in 2 games. He has an 8.77 save percentage. Hutchinson's has a 4.56 goals against and an 8.57 save percentage. And of course, Joseph Woll, who just played his first ever NHL game, gave up 4, has an 8.52 save percentage. Man, they better hope Jack Campbell stays healthy, because this dude is next level. If I'm Kyle Dubas, I'm paying the dude now. I'm paying him now. Or the thought process is wait till he gets cold and then sign him. But if they can lock Campbell up to that 4 or 5 year deal at $4 or $5 million, I'd do it. Do it. Do it and do it now. Jack Campbell is a late bloomer who was drafted originally by the Dallas Stars. Didn't play because there was a guy named Kari Lehtinen that used to play there, who was a pretty good goalie, NHL All-Star, consistent playoff guy. And then he gets moved to the Kings. And well, the Kings had Jonathan Quick, who, if you remember Jonathan Quick and like 09, 10, 11, 12, was a Vezina candidate, a Calder Trophy, or a Calder Trophy. He was a Conn Smythe winner in the playoffs. So obviously he wasn't playing. Then there was that short time where Jonathan Quick got hurt and Campbell played and his numbers were ridiculous. And then the Leafs traded a 3rd-round pick and got him and Kyle Clifford. Well, now, Jack Campbell, at 29 years of age, goalies take longer to develop and thrive. That's why Carter Hart right now isn't playing nearly as good hockey as he has been in his rookie year. He's still like 21. Jack Campbell, 6'2", 197 pounds. He's a first round pick, 11th overall in 2010. So not even 09, 2010. A couple of years in Dallas, gets moved. Like, teams are just so quick to make the decision on goaltenders. Can we stop with the Jack Campbell needs to still prove it nonsense? He's focused every game. Even the games where he's not, he battles, he works, he hustles. The playoffs last year were a coming out party for him. He was the better goaltender between him and Carey Price. Yes, he was. His numbers were better. He's a starting caliber goaltender. He is a great to elite goaltender. He is. I've seen enough of him. By the way, there is the leaders, and I think save percentage and goals against. Of the top 4, 3 of them are former Leafs. James Reimer, Frederik Andersen, Jack Campbell. It's a goalie. They're just turning out elite goaltenders there in Toronto. But Leafs are clicking. Everything's positive about them right now. Marner's back on it. Matthews looks dangerous. Nylander's a stud. Tavares scored again against Buffalo. Jack Campbell looks great. Defensively, Rasmus Sandin. There's a stat, by the way. Rasmus Sandin is in 2 of the top 5 pairings in the NHL in terms of like goals for percentage. So there's a percentage of how many goals for you're on the on for versus goals against. And a pairing with him and Timothy Liljegren is like top 3. And then him with Travis Dermott is like top 5. So the Rasmus Sandin effect is real. The kid's good. He needed some time. Liljegren looks great too. Toronto gets Nashville tonight. They get a little bit of a homestand here. They get Nashville. I think they get the Rangers. And then they get and then the Penguins again, a little bit of a redemption game. They're losing 7-1 to the Penguins without Malkin and Crosby and Letang. So yeah, Jack Campbell's the real deal. And Toronto, who started the season off 2-4-1, are now 10-5-1 and just 2 points behind the Florida Panthers for first in the Atlantic Division. So there you have it. No other news and updates for today. I think I got to the majority of it. Thank you for listening in. If you want to listen in on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, feel free to do so. ST Hockey Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Again, It's been a crazy last 4 or 5 days. I will try to get back onto posting on that a little bit more regularly. Thank you for always listening weekly, and enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy the rest of some NHL hockey. We'll see what else happens. Congratulations to all of the inductees into the NHL Hockey Hall of Fame, and I will see you next week. Until then, enjoy. That's a wrap.